Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Coming up today, we'll look back at the Republican National Convention last night, and we'll also hear about economic disparity here in the Tampa Bay area. We'll look at a new study that reveals the disparity between Tampa Bay's black and white residents. First, several listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we interviewed a local planning official about the impact of a Category 5 hurricane on the Tampa Bay area. What would the potential impact be? And also, we heard from Doc Rivers, the coach of the Clippers, who is responding to the recent killings of African Americans. Here's what several listeners had to say.
I was listening to the lady talk about the Cat 5 hitting Tampa. I wish one thing would have been kind of clarified a little bit. I live on a golf course up in Zephyr Hills, and I can get 2 inches of rain, and I can have my backyard flooded. She kept saying the term flooded. Also, I work on the Port of Tampa, and when I leave, I see these storm surge posts. So maybe if you could have asked, you know, the question, like, what do you mean by flooding? Is it 4 inches of water on the ground, or is it 15 feet of water that is covering you? I thought it was a great program, but, you know, the term flooded can really mean anything.
This is Mark from Bel Air. I appreciate the information that you produced Wednesday regarding the hurricane preparedness. We got to work it out for us if one hits us directly. I hope it doesn't. But afterwards, you had some talk about the RNC. And here's my opinion. DNC is not much better, but the RNC is a cult comprised of grifters, dominating rubes. Simple as that. Sad but true. But that's the way I've been witnessing things for the last 4 years, and it's not going to get any better. People got to vote that guy out of the office. He's a mockery to our Constitution.
This is Sam from Seminole. I just wanted to just make a comment on your guest today. She is very informative, and I really appreciate you having her on. I'm learning a lot of things. And just wanted to say the statement that Doc Rivers made earlier was 100% spot on.
This is Gerald. The thing is, Doc Rivers states nothing but facts. I grew up with racism and still deal with racism. It's a sad situation that the Republican National Convention is touting everything that is wrong with the United States when most of these issues occurred right after Barack Obama left office. But racism has always been around, and it's never going anywhere until people realize that we're all one. Not to bring up religion or anything like that, but we all are created in the image and likeness of the Almighty. I hope people will realize this and get rid of all the things that we hate, because hate and anger are not something that we need. At this time in the world, we need to be together, find solutions, work toward them, and do what we're supposed to do.
Well, those listener comments came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I think in fairness to our guest yesterday, she did point out that a wall of water 15 feet high and in some points higher will flood the Tampa Bay area if a Category 5 storm hits Indian Rocks Beach and hits the spot on the Gulf Coast that's most dangerous if a storm were to hit. Hey, thanks to everybody that made a contribution last Friday and Saturday during the fund drive. We had a very successful short mini drive, and we raised enough funds so that we're actually shortening the number of days we're fundraising on the air. So thanks to all those people that made contributions. It was a big success, and you can always make a contribution at WMNF.org. Well, next we're going to look at the disparity between black and white residents here in the Tampa Bay area. We've seen a lot of Black Lives Matter protests over the last few months, and a local group, the Tampa Bay Partnership, which is a coalition of regional business leaders joined by a shared commitment to improving the personal and economic well-being of Tampa Bay residents, did a study about what's it like in the black community and in the white community, if you compare the two, when it comes to things like education and wages and home ownership. And earlier this week, I spoke with Rick Homans, who is the CEO and president of the Tampa Bay Partnership, about this study, and here's that interview. Rick Homans, welcome to WMNF. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be with you.
So what were you studying when you undertook this report?
Well, the premise of the report was really to take a look, a pretty deep look, at the issue of racial and ethnic equity in Tampa Bay, meaning, you know, and in particular, we wanted to look at the difference between a black person living in Tampa Bay and a white person living in Tampa Bay, quite frankly, to get at some underlying data so that our leaders and our community has a better idea of what the real systemic problems and challenges are in our community.
Have you done a study like this before to look at the disparity between Tampa Bay's black and white residents?
Well, we've done it to some degree, and this, I have to say, goes beyond. It focuses on the black and white disparities, but it looks at other races and other ethnic groups as well. So it's got a lot of depth to it, the study that we did. And we've kind of scratched the surface of the issue before, but never looked in the detail that we did here. And this report is an extension of the annual regional competitiveness report that we do that looks at a fairly high level at 60-some indicators that drive the prosperity of the region. And that does not break it down by race and ethnicity. So we felt that there was a need to do what we call the deeper dive and to, you know, really break out those numbers and see at a more granular level what the community looked like in this regard.
And you use census data for this study that...
Primarily census data and any other forms of reputable, easily attainable data, but the most predominant source of the data is the census for this.
Well, let's talk about some of the indicators that you looked at. You looked at median wage, you looked at education, you looked at broadband access, home ownership, poverty, student achievement.
Yeah.
Let's talk about wages for a moment. What did you find about wages?
Well, you know, you start the conversation knowing that Tampa Bay in general is ranked very low when we compare ourselves to 19 other markets across the country. We're generally 19th or 20th in terms of wages that we pay. But even with that, there's a gap between black and white wages of about 20%, 21.4% to be precise, where the average black worker is earning $16.42 compared to the average white worker earning $20.90. Now, you know, some other markets like Portland, for example, has a larger gap, 26% between black and white, but the black wages are $18.92 compared to our $16.42, and the white wages are $25.70, so a full 20% higher than our white wages of $20.90. So we actually are at the top of the list, meaning we have the lowest gap of the 19 markets we compare ourselves to. But you have to look at that in the context that our black wages are amongst the lowest in the country, and our white wages are amongst the lowest in the country. So we've got a big job ahead of us when it comes to wages.
And I would imagine that goes to the fact that we're largely a service economy and a tourist economy, and wages
exactly.
In
service,
those sectors.
Yeah. Service, retail, hospitality, that pay less and actually have been disproportionately impacted during the COVID-19 pandemic as well. So our economy is one of the more vulnerable ones in the country, which compounds the challenges that you see in this equity report.
A lot of kids are going back to school this week or next week here in the Tampa Bay area. Let's talk about education and also broadband access. Education first. What did you learn about the black and white disparity?
Well, it's significant. And, you know, there's a lot of Florida data available here when it comes to educational attainment and proficiency. But first, on the educational attainment, we looked at the percentage of Tampa Bay residents 25 and older who have a bachelor's degree or higher, and we actually have the second lowest gap in amongst the 19 markets. But again, it's because we start with such a low base. It's 10.3%. 20% of the black residents 25 and older have a bachelor's degree or higher, compared to 30% of the white residents. But you look at the community that was the lowest gap, Nashville, again, just like us, with about a 10% gap, their black population has a 27% bachelor's degree compared to our 20%, and their white population has a 37% compared to ours at 30%. So same gap, but at a much higher performing level as a community. The issue we saw with educational attainment, which to us was really kind of startling, was the 20% gap between the black wages and the white wages. It actually stayed pretty consistent no matter what the education level that a black resident would achieve. So you would think, you know, okay, less than high school, once you get a diploma, you could do better. Once you go to college, could do better. Once you get a bachelor's degree, could do better. But actually, the gap at the bachelor's degree level between white wages and black wages is the highest of all the levels of education. So it's almost like the higher education that you achieve, the worse the gap is. It's not appreciably different from, you know, what it is at the high school level, but it does not improve. And the fact that there's a 20% gap at any of these levels is completely unacceptable and a big challenge for us to deal with. And, you know, you brought up the broadband issue, and these are the kinds of, you know, we think systemic issues that make it really challenging to try to close these gaps, because you find in this market, we're 18th out of the 20 markets that we list. A black resident, on average, 71% have broadband access, compared to a white resident, 85%. So that's almost 14% gap between a black residents and white residents. And you look at, you know, higher performing markets like San Diego and Seattle and Atlanta, and their gaps tend to be in the 6 to 7%. We're twice as high as them. And that becomes a really important issue when we're talking about online education and access to goods and services and people being confined to their homes during the pandemic. Broadband access is access to the world, and a high percentage of the black population just doesn't have it.
Yeah. And then also, if your employer lets you work from home and you don't have that access at home to broadband, that's also a drawback.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big issue in this day and age.
What about poverty? When you're looking at the black community and the white community here in the Tampa Bay area, are poverty rates appreciably different between the black and white community here as opposed to other parts of the country?
Well, they are, and I think all the other issues that we're talking about kind of roll up into the issue and the poverty label. You know, we are one of the we have one of the highest gaps between black and white poverty amongst the markets that we looked at. The level of white poverty is about 10.6%. Black poverty is 24%. There's a 13.7% difference. And that's about, you know, another way to put that is a black resident, black family is two times more likely to live in poverty than a white. But the situation becomes even more dire when one looks at children in poverty. That rate is 35% for children, and a black child is three times more likely to live in poverty than a white child. So, yeah, the poverty issue is big. And, Rob, I go back one second to the education, you know, discussion that we had before. we looked at the talent indicators, or not the talent indicators, but the, you know, levels of proficiency and the Florida education standards. And I think this was one of the most telling and most alarming statistics to look at, because we know how critical education is, and we know how much of a determinant it is when one can read in third grade or not read in third grade. And when you just look at those third grade reading scores, white students, 68% have proficiency, which still is alarmingly low. But then you look at the black population, it's 35%. It's roughly half. So whereas a third of the black students at the third grade level have proficiency with reading and two-thirds don't, in the white population, two-thirds have proficiency and one-third don't. And that stays across the board when one's looking at third and eighth grade math, at science, at Algebra 1, Biology 1. These gaps are anywhere between, you know, 32 and 35%. And they result in a graduation rate from high school amongst the black population that is 10 points lower. And so all of this feeds into this poverty rate and the great disparity that we see between the black population and the white population. And most experts, you know, say that this is tied directly to the education system and the, you know, level of proficiency that these students achieve.
One more question about the actual numbers. Home ownership, how does home ownership differ here in the Tampa Bay area?
Well, we're one of the largest gaps amongst the communities that we've looked at. Amongst the black population, there's about a 40.8% home ownership compared to a 73.3% home ownership in the white population. And, you know, this is obviously a loaded number, because there are so many issues in terms of wealth accumulation, the stability of a neighborhood, what led to this lack of home ownership, you know, the redlining practices, the segregation, the inability to secure a mortgage to buy a home. So this is, you know, something that certainly there's a discussion going on now. Is it better to own or to rent? But where we're looking at such a massive difference of 32%, you know, from black to white, there's something underlying this that is very profound and needs to be addressed.
Well, our guest is Rick Homans. He's the president and CEO of the Tampa Bay Partnership, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're talking about a new study on the racial disparity here in the Bay Area when it comes to income, education, home ownership, and other issues. The partnership has just completed the study. So, Rick, I'm sure a lot of people are saying, I know why this is happening, and they've got answers to it and all that. Was it the partnership's charge to say, this is why the disparities are happening, or are you just doing this as a benchmark for government, for employers, and for the community itself to kind of take a look at itself?
You know, we're doing this, and the work that we do on the regional competitiveness report and on this regional equity report is done in collaboration with United Way, Suncoast, and the Community Foundation of Tampa Bay. And all of us have an interest in putting facts and good data and good research on the table so that we can make informed decisions going forward. And as we develop strategies collectively as a community to improve this situation, that we have data that we're looking at, that we can set goals and we can look back at it and we can look to it and see if it's improving as we go forward. So we wanted to get the right data, the accurate data on the table. And we felt that the disparities that it revealed are a real wake-up call to the community, and particularly to the leadership of Tampa Bay. I think some of whom are just not aware of the depth of the disparities and the great gaps that exist. you can read about it, you can hear about it, but when you actually, you know, see these numbers and then you go into the community and you see what these numbers mean in terms of people's lives, it has a whole lot more meaning and I think will, you know, be a catalyst for change and for action. So that's what we're all, you know, geared towards is we have to use this data to make some changes. And, you know, we are setting up on September 3rd a virtual community forum. We've invited Yvette Lewis from the NAACP, Braulio Colon from Helios, and Bemitra Simmons from United Way to participate in a panel, but we'll be presenting this data in a great deal of detail, and then we'll be talking about it, and then we'll be taking questions from the audience, and this will be part of a continued effort moving forward, you know, to build a collaborative effort with many of the groups that are working on these, you know, big challenges that we face.
The racial disparities in your report are pretty stark. Are there some communities in the country, you matched us against other communities in the country, are there other places in the country that have narrowed the gap between black folks and white folks?
Well, you know, this is, Ron, this is a national conversation taking place, and, you know, I'm listening and looking for the best practices that we can learn from. I think as a nation, we're in this together, just like we are in the pandemic. We're into this issue of racial equity together. And there's a reckoning of sorts for, you know, centuries of systemic racism that have taken root and that have caused, you know, the big problems that exist today. And I think it's going to take a community-wide effort to, you know, to solve this and to create a much higher degree of equity in our community, where everybody has an equal opportunity to succeed and to achieve. Right now, the deck looks stacked pretty heavily against a black resident in Tampa Bay compared to a white resident, and our job is to narrow that gap and create a more equitable playing field.
Is there anything else you'd like to point out about the 2020 Regional Equity Report that we haven't discussed so far?
Well, I would encourage people to go to stateoftheregion.com. They can subscribe to the State of the Region newsletter. They can get access to the Regional Equity Report and sign up for the September 3rd forum on stateoftheregion.com. And through that, you'll be able to participate in a community-wide conversation about this important issue.
Rick Homans, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Rob, thank you.
That's Rick Homans, who's president and CEO of the Tampa Bay Partnership. And we were talking about the new study that the partnership has just put out, the 2020 Regional Equity Report. And they did that in collaboration with the Community Foundation of Tampa Bay and United Way Suncoast, and they looked at the pretty dramatic inequities across the region between black residents and white residents, and they also compared our region to 19 other regions around the country. And you can find the report at stateoftheregion.com. Well, if you want to comment about that, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Email address here. If you want to comment via email, send it to dj@wmnf.org. Thanks for tuning in. This is WMNF in Tampa. And that hurricane has made its way north of the Gulf Coast, right near the Louisiana-Texas border. And at least one person has died due to a falling tree. A teenager has been killed, but we haven't really seen a good report yet about the total extent of the damage. I'm going to suggest a few other topics that we might talk about. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. A white 17-year-old admirer of President Trump and of guns and of the police has been arrested after killing two people during a third night of protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin, over the police shooting of a black man named Jacob Blake. The alleged killer is Kyle Rittenhouse. He fled to Illinois. He was taken into custody yesterday on suspicion of first-degree intentional homicide. Two people were shot to death Tuesday night in an attack carried out by a young white man who was caught on cell phone video opening fire in the middle of the street with a semi-automatic rifle. That person has been identified as Rittenhouse. That 80-year-old federal law, the Hatch Act, is getting a lot of attention as lawmakers and legal experts voice concerns over President Trump's decision to use the White House as the backdrop for his acceptance speech tonight and using other federal facilities during the Republican National Convention. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows dismissed the law yesterday, saying nobody outside the Beltway really cares about the Hatch Act law, but others are pressing the administration, including a House panel that's investigating whether Secretary of State Mike Pompeo violated the act by speaking at the convention during a taxpayer-funded trip to Jerusalem. And if you want to comment about this, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Three Major League Baseball games were postponed yesterday as players across the country in professional sports reacted to the weekend shooting by police of Jacob Blake. Games between the Cincinnati Reds and Brewers in Milwaukee, the Seattle Mariners and the Padres in San Diego, and the Los Angeles Dodgers and Giants in San Francisco were called off hours before they were set to begin. Other MLB games had finished. They were in progress or just about to start as the announcements were made. The postponements came after the NBA's Milwaukee Bucks did not come out on the floor for Game 5 of their first-round playoff series with the Orlando Magic. NBA officials later announced that all three of the day's scheduled playoff games yesterday had been postponed. While the nation continues in a recession and unemployment remains high, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos became the world's first person to ever hit a net worth of $200 billion yesterday as the tech giant's stock continued to rise. Yesterday, Amazon shares rose to $3,400 per share. Amazon's stock price has been soaring during the recession as millions of people have been staying at home and ordering more products online. The company's share price has doubled since March, which really pretty much tracks the recession. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. The Republican television event, which has replaced an official convention featuring Vice President Mike Pence last night. And we're going to listen to a little bit of what the vice president said, and I want you to give your reaction to what the vice president said. Here is Vice President Mike Pence on the third night of the Republican National Convention event. Not really a convention, more a series of speeches.
We will defend our freedom and our way of life. We will reelect our president and principled Republican leaders across the land. And with President Donald Trump in the White House for four more years, and with God's help, we will make America great again. Again. In our first 3 years, we built the greatest economy in the world. We made America great again. And then the coronavirus struck from China. Before the first case of the coronavirus spread within the United States, the president took unprecedented action and suspended all travel from China, the second largest economy in the world. Now that action saved untold American lives. And I can tell you firsthand, it bought us invaluable time to launch the greatest national mobilization since World War II. Last week, Joe Biden didn't say one word about the violence and chaos engulfing cities across this country. So let me be clear. The violence must stop, whether in Minneapolis, Portland, or Kenosha. Too many heroes have died defending our freedom to see Americans strike each other down. We will have law and order on the streets of this country for every American of every race and creed and color. When asked whether he'd support cutting funding to law enforcement, Joe Biden replied, yes, absolutely. Joe Biden would double down on the very policies that are leading to violence in America's cities. The hard truth is, you won't be safe in Joe Biden's America. And under President Trump, we will always stand with those who stand on the thin blue line, and we're not going to defund the police, not now, not ever. You won't be safe in Joe Biden's America.
Mike Pence, last night, that soundbite actually got played twice. If you want to comment about what Mike Pence said last night as he runs for re-election along with Donald Trump, call us up, 813-239-9663. Amy Goodman played a little bit more of the speech during Democracy Now! Earlier today, and there were some additional things that I think we might talk about that I didn't play just now. So if you want to comment about the accuracy, the fairness, the content, the truthfulness of the Pence speech, you can call us up and let us know what you think. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Bill Grace is our phone producer today, and we're going to go to Roger in Sarasota first. Hi, Roger. What would you like to say?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I listened to the segment on the hourly wages between black workers and white workers, and I listened with interest, but I'm kind of curious, could that possibly be a reflection of the different kinds of work that white folks and black folks end up bonding themselves in? In other words, is it apples to apples? Do they compare a black guy working at McDonald's with a white guy working at McDonald's?
I got to say, I didn't drill down that deep in the report. Let me just tell you what it says. It says median wages for black workers, $16.42 an hour in the Tampa Bay area, are 21% less than white workers, $20.90 per hour. So they are talking about wages. We know that. And while this gap is the smallest among the benchmark communities analyzed in the report, this is largely attributed to the low median wages earned across all races in Tampa Bay. So beyond that, I hesitate to say anything, but that's what the report says.
Okay, and as far as Pence's speech is concerned, I think everybody knows he's lying when he says Joe Biden is a proponent of defunding the police. Joe Biden has stated quite clearly that he is not a proponent of defunding the police.
I think that's true. Roger, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663 is the phone number to call if you want to get on the air. Kay writes this, the speech was full of inaccuracies. The violence in the cities is under Trump world. Biden will not have the unrest. We are not safe in Trump's America, writes Kay. Kay, thank you for that. 813-239-9663. There's various fact checks out there about the speech, and the Associated Press fact-checked the portion of the speech about the economy, and this is what they said about the speech. If I could pull it up here. And, all right, I'm not going to be able to pull it up. Let's go back to the phones for a second while I try to fix this. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Hey, you know, about this, the latest shooting, the police shooting James Blake 7 times in the back. The comment I got to make is that, did you hear what Lindsey Graham said about it?
Well, remind me what he said. I did. I was scanning this morning and saw it, but then I kind of dismissed it.
He said, why didn't he yield? Why didn't he yield? Well, you know, he also said that he wasn't there, so he didn't know all the. So I guess, you know, he gets let off.
Well, there's a lot of people defending the shooter too. By the way, Fox News had a couple of people defending the shooter last night.
The
Tucker Carlson. And some other conservative commentators have been defending the shooter. So what do you make of that?
Well, I think that they're basically trying to instill fear and loathing into the people that are going to try to vote for somebody besides Trump. And you know, well, Carlson, I mean, that guy is, you know, he's off the rails. People that watch him are probably, you know, that believe everything he says are sure believing QAnon and everything else, too. But, you know, my thing is that this whole thing about fear, that ties into what Doc Rivers said. And then when you hear the speech last night and you hear them saying these outrageous things while the country is being run by a bunch of Republicans right now. And that point that the last caller made, or emailer, I mean, that's perfect, that Trump is blaming Biden for something that they're responsible for right now.
When Gaetz said the other day that MS-13 is going to move in, he's talking about a Latino gang, MS whatever it is going to move in next door to you.
Well, you know, there are people that are spending a lot of money and time with guns these days. I've even seen it in my own neighborhood. Fear is being amplified by the Republicans, and that is a fact that I don't think anybody can argue with.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Karen in Dunedin, who wants to point out something that was missing from the portion of the Pence speech that I just played. Hi, Karen. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
I was really disturbed to hear that the Homeland Security Guard was, you know, that they tried to give you the impression that it was shot by a Black Lives Matter protester and not a Boogaloo military person that did that. And I want my Trump people in my life to know this because, yeah, the impression you get by listening to that is that, oh, it's because of the protesters.
Yeah, this guy Underwood was shot in Oakland, California by a far-right militant, and Pence named him last night, named the victim last night, but it kind of indicated that he was a victim of left-wing violence, and he was actually the victim of right-wing violence. Pence did not call it out last night.
No, of course not, and that's disturbing, and a lot of this stuff, because these people are only following the convention as through Fox News' lens, and so they're not getting the facts, and they're believing it. So, anyway, have
a
great day.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for calling in, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Let's go to Steve in Sarasota. Steve, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, pleasure to be here. In follow-up to what Mr. Pence said, this whole theme of they're coming for your guns, Matt Gaetz said, and I quote, "It's a horror film, really. They'll disarm you, empty the prisons, lock you in your home, and invite MS-13 to live next door." So I guess my feeling is, this is simply language designed to incite fear and to incite people to violence. Mr. Gaetz should be admonished minimally by the Congress for this kind of statement.
Now, Steve, not every...
Unfortunately, this is the new norm.
Yeah, so, Steve, not everybody is that gullible, but who do you think is going to be most susceptible to believing that?
Well, I think a 17-year-old kid in Kenosha who drove 10 miles to shoot three people in a protest with his AR-15 and then was actually supported by the police department there, he's got a problem.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot. Glad you made it through. Good to hear from you. And we're taking comments about all the topics I mentioned on the show today. And if you want to comment, the number to call is 813-239-9663. Ernie writes this, "Despite what Mr. Trump says, the stock market is not the economy," writes Ernie in Dunedin. Thank you for that, Ernie. And then Peter writes, "Pence lies just like his boss. Peter in Tampa goes on to say Biden did indeed speak out against any violence connected to the mostly peaceful protests. He also lied about Trump building such a great economy. That economy was inherited from President Obama, who is the one who really saved the economy in 2009. Listeners, don't watch anymore on the RNC. Let's keep the ratings low to anger the orange menace. That's a Peter's opinion. Thank you, Peter, for your opinion. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jeff in Plant City. Jeff, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
It seems to me that the Trump plan for America is going to look like a pyramid scheme.
How so?
Well, inverted pyramid scheme.
Oh, with the people at the top make all the money?
Yes, and he's looking for more salespeople, you know, to work underneath him. But this is all, this fear-mongering is a part of Republican DNA. Do you remember an ad that Richard Corcoran, you know, I know he's not really connected to this, but the ad he put on...
He was running for governor, and he had this young white woman jogging through the streets.
A suburban neighborhood.
And this hooded person who appeared to have dark skin came up and killed her. Did he kill her in that commercial? I forgot.
Well, that
or
was
he robbed too, or he robbed her. Some, one of the
too
two.
Much of a climax, you know, because I'm sure, like they say on TV every day, just imagine, you know, what the outcome could be. You probably got a better imagination than me. But he used that diorama or little drama or whatever it was, and he compared it to the situation in California where the immigrant who'd been, you know, in and out of jails killed the woman with the gun he found on the pier.
You know what's interesting to me, and that was a homeless man, and the gun went off. He didn't deliberately shoot the young woman. It's terrible that she was killed, but, you know, it wasn't the deliberate attack by an immigrant on a young woman. You know what's interesting to me, though, is that Corcoran, his family comes from Ireland. And if we look at the history of the way the Irish were treated here in the beginning in the mid-1800s and going right up until the 1920s, they were considered... lesser people in the U.S. by the dominant culture. And the Irish had to fight to be accepted. There were signs in some parts of the country that said no Irish need apply. So for Corcoran, who's now a pillar of the establishment, for him to forget his family's history, that seems to me wrong, doesn't it?
He's more of an opportunist. You know, this is like people say, hey, I didn't own any slaves, you know. My family didn't own any slaves, you know. Why should I be concerned about this? And he probably looks at it like, hey, those people were poor then. I'm here now living the dream, you know. I got money. But I sent him an email and I said, it's better to be thought of a racist than to produce a race-baiting misconstruation on TV and remove all doubt. And he put me on his mailing list.
Oh, good. All right. Well, Jeff, thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call. You are listening to 88.5 FM. Let's go to Carlos in Tampa. Carlos, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
Well, I mean, I was just listening to the VP comment, and it seems it's very scary. We're becoming a police state, basically. Instead of sitting down with the protesters and fixing the issues, they're going just to put more police and shoot people.
Yeah, he ignored the issue of police killings of black people entirely and said, you just got to stop it and we're going to have law and order. Well, if you want law and order, why not start to treat black people equally?
I mean, sit down and listen to the issues and try to resolve them. This is what military regime does, Rob. It's like when someone goes protest, 20%, they don't come back home. They get, they get handcuffed or killed or whatever. And this is what's going on now. I mean, the two people that they were shot to death on Tuesday, and there is a protest tomorrow in Tampa. I'm sure aware of it, in Fowler Avenue. God knows, something may happen there, may happen all over the state. It seems to me that the president is given the green light to go ahead and start killing the protesters and beating them and do whatever. It's ridiculous. This is becoming more and more looks like a third world military regime country.
All right, Carlos, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. All right, good to hear from you. Let's go to Julia in Tampa. Hi, Julia, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. I wanted to relate to your audience some of the experiences that I had with my son when we first moved to Tampa and with the school system here. Before we moved here, my son was in a Montessori school, a private Montessori school in White Oak, Maryland. And when he left there, they told me he was scoring in on standardized test scores in the top 1% of the country.
And Julie, could I just back up a little bit? Could I assume that you're African American?
Yes.
I don't want to make the wrong assumption. Okay, go ahead.
And he was scoring in the top 1% in the country on standardized tests, and they told me that he was really intelligent. We moved to Florida when he was in the fourth grade, and they immediately put him in a remedial class. They didn't tell me they were putting him in a remedial class. And about 2 weeks after he was in the class, his teacher called me and said, we gave Cameron a test for reading, and he scored higher than any kid in the history of Claywell. And they said, she said, I think you should have him tested for the gifted program. And I said, well, what do I have to do? And she said, don't worry, just call the principal's office and they will give him the test. It won't cost you anything. When I contacted the principal's office, they refused to give him the test. And so I just thought that was the end of it. And his teacher called me about maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. She said, Cameron is still in my class. Did you contact the principal's office? And I said, yes. And I said, they said that they were not going to give him the test for gifted. And she just kind of paused, and then she said, well, there's a way you can get around that. If you take him to an outside psychologist and that psychologist certifies him in the gifted range, then the school has to take him. I did that. It cost me $350 for a test that should have been free. And she certified him in the gifted range, and from that day with the school, the war was on. They had one gifted teacher that locked Cameron in a closet. He was the only African-American kid in the whole class. They locked him in a closet. There was another teacher that in the room told the kids in the class, she said, she pointed to this one guy, she said, look, beat Cameron up, but do us a favor, do it when no one's looking. And they took that as a mandate. They used to pummel him in the gym. They used to pummel him on the way to class. It got to the point where he would hang back and not walk with the other kids to go to from class to class. And when he got to the class, they would write him up for being late.
And Julie, did you feel like you could file a lawsuit against the school or the teachers that said this?
At the time, no, because we were just inundated with the newness of everything. I didn't know the system. My dad had cancer, and my mom was in her like late 80s, and so I was like inundated with things to do. We had just bought a house. And the other thing, too, was when we bought a house that cost $142,000. They made us put down a $32,000 down payment. It was the three
that's
of us.
A lot of money.
And our interest rate was 8% at a time when they were advertising, you know, interest rates around 5%. My mother had an income of $5,000 a month retirement from having worked for the government in D.C. for over 4 years. My father came up with the money for the down payment, and I was working in the three of us, they wouldn't even certify us for less than that. It was amazing. I mean, it's been... Yeah.
Well, Julia, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for calling in and giving us your account of what happened. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. We were talking about the disparity between blacks and whites here in the Tampa Bay area. Julia, thank you. Let's go to David in Sarasota. David, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yes, dear. Thank you. First of all, thank you for the opportunity of giving a place to put our voice up to the people, because I think that our voices are what really matter. It's not about Democrat or Republican or black, white, Hispanic. It happened that I'm a Hispanic, and I'm also a U.S. citizen. I've been here for about 25 years, living now, and I've been through Republican and Democrat governance ruling over us. And I find that the best thing we can do is just apply common sense of what is going on. You know, common sense told me that to live in this country, I have to respect the authority. It doesn't matter if they are Republican or Democrat. It's just respecting the authority. And it really bothers me that lately with this defunding the police, it's just lacking the respect that we have to put to the authorities that are supposed to take care of us. And if without police, this is what you get, people defending by themselves. It's just more of common sense. That's the way I see it.
But David, can you see why some people are afraid of the police?
Well, I see that people is afraid of police. People is afraid of robbing people. People is afraid of black people or Hispanic people or MS-13. But you cannot put everybody in one box and say that everybody is wrong or bad. It might be 1%, 2%, 3% of bad police, but it doesn't mean that you have to take advantage of that and go over all the police. It's like a disbar.
I don't have the list in front of me, but with all the police killings just in the last few months that people have talked about, a lot of people are saying this has gone on for years and years and years.
Exactly.
And it's not stopped, and people finally reached the breaking point. I mean, Jacob Blake is just the latest one in Kenosha, the latest person to be killed by police, and it appears that the police didn't have to kill him, and I think that's why so many people are upset.
So. I think that is wrong. The way we see that in TV is wrong. It's wrong the way that they kill Mr. Floyd also. I think that is wrong. I'm not saying that the police is right by doing that, but what percentage of the police is the one that make that kind of behavior?
Yeah, well, I think that's an entirely fair question. But the other, and I don't have these numbers in front of me, and forgive me, but something like 600 people in the last year have been shot and killed by police, and that includes about 600, and about 125 of them. And I only know this because I was watching MSNBC for a few minutes last night, and that's what one of their people said. So, about 125 of those were African Americans. Many are white, many are Hispanic. And I think that's why people are finally fed up, and that's why you see these big demonstrations against the police killing.
I understand, but that is the small picture. I'm seeing the big picture. I come from a country where the MS-13 are killing thousands of people, and I don't want to see that here. People are fleeing here legally and illegally because of that. And what the American people don't see here is how damaging those things are happening in other countries that are fleeing to this country.
David, did you come from El Salvador?
I come from Guatemala.
Oh, from Guatemala, okay.
To El Salvador.
Yeah.
In Guatemala, they begin exactly the same thing. They begin by having a peaceful protest, which I support peaceful protest, and then they go let's do riots. And then I start saying that's wrong because you are messing up with
other people. Well, I mean, Guatemala has a long and interesting history with the U.S. We overthrew your democratically elected president, Arbenz, in 1953. But, David, we don't have time to talk about the interesting history of Guatemala, but thank you very much for your phone call.
All right. Thank you for giving us the place to have our voice out.
All right. And I think everybody heard and understood what you had to say. Thank you very much. Elijah writes this: the only problem with Trump getting voted out of office is that all the supporters of the madman will still be around spreading new kinds of ignorance. That's Elijah's opinion. Thank you, Elijah. And let's go to whoever's been holding the longest. It looks like Jose has been holding a long time. Jose, what would you like to say?
Well, actually, what I wanted to say, I guess, has been pretty much hit on by several of the people before me. I mean, the idea that Tucker Carlson last night advocating, he was actually justifying why this man with a rifle, this 17-year-old kid, shot people. He was actually justifying what he was doing. And as someone said, we have a rally, a protest going in Tampa this weekend. What's going to happen? He's sending a signal out to all these nutcases who are cleaning their rifles as we speak. And I'd love to go into it more, but I realize you're about
out of time. Yeah, we're out of time. All right, Jose, thanks a lot. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
I wish we had more time. The Surly Feminists are coming up in the next hour. They may talk about one of these topics. So thank you for listening. And thanks to Bill Grace, our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. And if you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. And it looks like tomorrow we may finally have that eyewitness who's been in Portland the last 3 months looking at the protests at night.